All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com. Delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown, episode 50 at dailyfaceoff.com. I'm Jason Greger, along with Frank Saravalli. We come to you live from the woodjerseys.com studio, where, of course, they are your licensed NHL product. You can see Frank's lovely Toronto Maple Leafs one, very intricate, lots of cool pieces. The Seattle Kraken, we've tweeted it out. We'll tweet it out again. They've got a new one at Wood Jerseys for the Kraken, and it goes through the whole process of how they make it, stain it, color it. It's awesome. So if you're
we've got a contest fan, going, Jay.
Yes, you can win it.
Yeah, you can win a Seattle Kraken Wood jersey. So check out our Twitter. We'll tweet out the details. You got to follow two simple instructions, follow two accounts, and you'll be in the running.
Yeah, that's pretty easy to do. So check it out, courtesy of woodjerseys.com. And Frank, it's now Friday. It is 2 days after free agency. There's still some names out there. There's always a few. But let's kind of recap. Let's start with the defense contracts. And some of them weren't even free agents. Of course, we see Seth Jones got traded to Chicago. Then he signs an 8-year deal for $9.5 million. Dougie Hamilton signed 7 years at $9 million. And then Zach Werenski signed 6 years at $9.53 million. So shorter, but higher than both of them. I got to think that's a little bit of Columbus just, you know, paying a little bit more to keep their own guy, which is fine. They're, you know, they haven't won a lot, so they probably have to do that. They're not the first organization to do it. But what do you make of this this defense and the new $9.5 million in a flat cap?
You forgot about Cale Makar, another guy. Yeah. 6 years.
That was a week ago almost. Kind of forgot about him.
It was $9 million, and that was a guy that didn't have any rights. He had no arb rights. So this is a massive change in the NHL's defensive market. And I got to tell you, the only people happier than those guys, Makar, Jones, Werenski, Charlie McAvoy, who has a $7.3 million qualifying offer at the end of this season. So hint, hint, Boston Bruins, you might want to start negotiating now. And what about Adam Fox, another guy with no rights? Well, I guess he will have arb rights with one additional pro season, but he's coming off a Norris Trophy year, neck and neck with Makar. Makar gets $9 million. Fox gets the trophy. Does he land in that same world? Could we have another $9+ million defenseman? This is where it seems to all be heading. And I got to say that out of all the contracts, the one that I like most, believe it or not, even though he had no rights, is Makar. He's a guy that since he stepped into the league has been a point per game defenseman, including the playoffs. And he just produces. He's just a guy that he's become the engine of that Colorado defense and actually a lot of what they do offensively as well. So, it's a bold move by Colorado because they could have been one of those teams that sits there and squeezes their guy. But I think it's actually one, everyone's always worried this deal, it takes him right to UFA and what happens in 6 years, blah, blah, blah. Like, cross that bridge when you come to it. The whole like welcome to UFA idea, I don't necessarily understand. Like, getting a shorter term deal, or in this case, a medium term deal, it makes sense, I think, for player and team more often than not. And don't let it get to this point where you're close to UFA. Negotiate a year ahead of time if you really want to keep him.
Yeah, I've never really understood worrying about 6 or 7 years down the road. So much can change. You don't know how competitive your team is going to be. And, Cale Makar, I'd be stunned if he isn't living up to his contract financially. I'd be very surprised. I think of those four defensemen, if I had a pick to take one, I'd lean pretty heavily to take Cale Makar. I just think, his whole ability and how he moves the puck around the ice up and down, he'll get better defensively like every young defenseman. And that's the thing, like Makar's offense, that's the natural part of his game. Just learning how to defend at key moments is something that every young defenseman just with more experience will have. So I really like that signing. They're all good defensemen, don't get me wrong. Like I'm always kind of surprised when a player signs a huge contract as a free agent in a team that hasn't had much success. And, so people look and say, well, is he just taking Chicago over a chance to win? Well, Chicago a little bit, but even Carolina, more so New Jersey, right? Like New Jersey's made the playoffs once in a decade, Frank. Like I just, you're a free agent, you're going there. And I know they got Bernier and they made a few other signings, but realistically, are the Devils making the playoffs in the next few seasons?
I think they're going to be close to knocking on the door this year. I don't think that anyone recognized really how good of a season Luke Hughes had. His brother, Jack. I'm getting all the Hughes guys mixed up. Of course, Luke is going to be there in New Jersey with his brother. But Nico Hischier, too, another really good player. Like those guys, they're a couple forwards away from really being able to break out. They've got the goalie and Mackenzie Blackwood. The goalie piece is often almost the hardest to find. And, they've got some other guys that had some good years. Ty Smith had a good year on the back end. They traded for Ryan Graves. Like, I think that team is significantly better than they were.
Okay. I look at their division and I kind of find it difficult to think that there's four teams, they're going to be ahead of technically five teams almost. Cause you got to be you got to be top four. So you got to be ahead of four teams in that division. And, there's Pittsburgh and Washington. Philly's made tons of changes to their team. The New York Rangers, I think a lot of people feel they're trending up. As long as the Rangers can have a good start to the season. And, if Mika Zibanejad can be ready to go at the start of the year, which the last two seasons he hasn't been, part of that was COVID 1 year. I understand it, but I look at them and, they just added Reeves. It's interesting. The New York Rangers, I think it's pretty abundantly clear as an organization that they felt they were just getting taken advantage of physically, and that's not going to happen anymore.
It was a seismic shift what happened with the Tom Wilson incident. And, in some ways, I think that led to the departure of Jeff Gorton and John Davidson. Chris Drury takes over. The mandate, as you said, is pretty clear. Barkley Goodrow, a guy who has some edge. And then you bring in Ryan Reeves, the deterrent. If you have a Tom Wilson problem, he's your solution. And so third round pick for Ryan Reeves. And just going back to that division, the Metro real quick, Carolina's back there.
Yeah.
The question is, obviously Philly had a lot of work to do and they made some significant moves on their back end. But how long are Pittsburgh and Washington going to be in the mix? The Islanders seemingly aren't changing at all. And I love this. Going back to our daily face-off top 75 free agents board, guess who the top two players remaining are?
New York Islanders.
Kyle Palmieri and Casey Cizikas. I wonder where they're going. I mean, yeah. Lou Lamoriello is an absolute master at keeping his cards close to the vest. I mean, look, the fact that None of those deals have leaked out as to, you know, what the terms are. Clearly, they've come to an agreement, or else those players would have been going somewhere else. And clearly, the Islanders were willing to step up and pay market rate, because as much as those guys might like playing on the island, no one's really giving up significant dollars. Casey Cizikas, you know, I'm told that there was significant interest from the Seattle Kraken. He almost went there. And instead, it appears that he's going to remain on the Islanders. They keep their team mostly intact from back-to-back conference final runs, or in this case, last year's semifinal run. And now they're opening up a new building. It's actually a pretty exciting time to be a New York Islander.
Yeah, they lost Jordan Eberle, but so they'll have to replace him. But, you know, it is like, you look at the Islanders and Carolina and the Rangers, and you go back to Pittsburgh and Washington, Frank. Like, when you have Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, the Penguins are going to stay competitive for me. I their GM's very aggressive. I think the Penguins will be in there until Sidney Crosby's close to 40. I think they're going to be a competitive team. Washington's got a lot of veterans. You know, they were able to, really, when you think about it, Frank, had they exposed Brandon Dillon instead, because a lot of people are saying, you know, or had they lost Dillon instead of Vanacek to Seattle, well, you know, they would have been, they'd probably be necessarily worse off, because now what happens is they ended up having Vanacek still and an extra second rounder, because one of the second rounders the two they got from Winnipeg, they just gave one to Seattle to get him back. And
is really that bad asset management by Seattle, that they could have taken Brendan Dillon and traded him for 2 second-round picks? Like, if you reverse engineer it and say, okay, is Seattle the team that screwed up here by not taking Brendan Dillon first off and getting 2 second-round picks for him?
Now, I don't think so, because I honestly believe they didn't think they were going to get Grubauer.
I don't think anyone thought that.
Yeah, so they got Driedger and they had Vanacek, and most people felt like, hey, that's, you know, it's younger, that's a pretty good goaltending tandem. And then all of a sudden they come up and they get Grubauer. And, you know, I might be in the minority. Like, maybe I'm wrong. I'm not sold yet on Grubauer. I don't know why. I think he's a good goalie. I'm not sure he's a starter. And it's funny, like, we can talk asset management, Frank. So you had Grubauer in Colorado. You didn't want to pay him. The turns out to be basically $6 million, $5.9 million. So you weren't willing to pay that. You end up, and you weren't willing to pay for Allmark or anybody else, it seems. So then you end up getting a goaltender, but it costs you a first rounder and it costs you Connor Timmins. Now, I know it's only 3.5 for this year, so you save some cap space, but is that cap space, and you didn't get Brandon Saad, so is that cap space valuable enough? Because now, if I look at Colorado, had they just, you know, maybe bit the bullet on Allmark or Grubauer, pick your poison on which one, are they that much below Darcy Kuemper in ability to make up for getting rid of Connor Timmins and a first rounder that you might have been able to move at the deadline when you recognize, oh, you know what, maybe there's a piece missing on our team? Like, I still think Colorado's blue line needs to get heavier. Right. Like, I like McDermott, but I still think in their top four, like, I know they'll have Eric Johnson and that's big, but having Taves, Girard and Makar in your top four, those guys average 191 pounds, Frank. Like, that's just not how you're successful in today's NHL.
I don't know. I think this team got the better goalie. Darcy Kuemper, you get Arizona to eat money. So instead of being at 4.5, he's at 3.5. That's, you know, a $2.4 million savings versus what Grubauer got on the open market. They brought in McDermott, as you said, and beefed up their blue line with a guy who's 6'5". That was your big complaint, that, you know, big people push around little people in the playoffs. And the thing is, now they need to spend some of that savings on a forward. They lost Brandon Saad. They kept Gabriel Landeskog, I think, at a reasonable cap hit. And I know the first round pick, I understand what you're saying, but in all theoretical, you know, opportunity, it's going to be like late first round pick, 26 to 32 in that range. So, you know, I actually have no issue with it. I still think there's a couple moves coming. You saw they signed Darren Helm 1 year, $1 million. Losing Saad hurts, especially at the cap it that he signed for in St. Louis. Like, I would have thought with some of the savings that they had that they would have turned back to Saad. They have a little over $7 million in cap space. Like, that's enough to go out and probably trade for another pretty good player, I would think.
Yeah, the first rounder, it wasn't so much the pick itself. It's the asset of what you could, you know, you could use it for. You could get a Blake Coleman at the trade deadline, right? Or maybe a Barkley Goodrow type of player who, and those guys had term left. That's what made those trades, I feel, so good for Tampa Bay at the time, because, you know, they gave up firsts, but they got guys for 2 years. And obviously those 2 years turned out to be perfect 2 years for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I, you know, I'm just intrigued. Like, it's hard to question Joe Sakic. He's made a lot of really good moves. I just felt like this one, maybe they overplayed a bit. We'll find out, because Darcy Kemper next summer, Frank, he's gonna have to be re-signed. Is he probably up to 4.5? Like, if he plays really well and has a great season, and he's probably got
to see what his injuries are like. I mean, that's been the thing on Kemper, is like, can he stay on the ice? And that was the big question mark. So this is his year to prove it.
Okay. But doesn't that then make it even more? So now you've added a goalie who has injury question marks in a summer where there is tons of goalies available that you probably could have picked him. I just think this was one. Now, you mentioned earlier about Kyle Palmieri and that he's already signed in New York. Like, if you're Colorado and you lose Brandon Saad, man, Kyle Palmieri would be a good replacement.
Yeah, I just – that deal, I think, is already done. I mean, I don't think Kyle Palmieri misses the first 2 days of free agency without having something in his back pocket. I wanted to mention Arizona, though, with the Coyotes trading Darcy Kemper. Are they going to be the worst team in the NHL in the salary cap era? I mean, I know that says a lot with some of the teams we've seen, from Detroit and Buffalo, even Colorado, the Colorado team.
2017.
Yeah. This is the race for Shane Wright, them and Buffalo. I mean, that's really what it is. Like, Arizona, who's going to play?
Well,
and like, they still might move Clayton Keller. They still might move Phil Kessel. Like, I think they're trying on those guys. Like, this is Jacob Chychrun was the guy that was the only untouchable, but their blue line is Chychrun, really good player. I actually gave him an Norris Trophy vote. Strahlman, Gostisbehere, Ilya Lyubushkin, and Connor Timmins. Those are their five D men right now.
Yeah, it's not, man. Like, if you're a Jacob Chychrun, how disappointing. Like, how here you are, it's, you know, July 30th, and you're like, man, I got to go to the gym for 2 hours. Now, I know you got to be a professional, but you at least want to go into a season thinking you have a chance. Like, most teams can convince themselves, if a few things go right here, we'll be in the mix. That's got to be really hard mentally for players like him. And you mentioned Clayton Keller at 7.1 million cap hit for like another 5 seasons. That's a tough deal, I think, to trade. So
it's another 7 seasons.
Yeah. So we'll see, you know, where they go to move him. I think Phil Kessel is definitely someone that's probably going to get moved, maybe more so during the season, closer to the trade deadline. He's somebody who's got a track record of being really good for you in the postseason, can score a timely goal. So I could see something like that. And
their two goalies are Carter Hutton and Joseph Cornash. Those guys total make $1.5 million.
Yeah.
Like, they're not even trying. They're not trying to be good. They're purposely trying to not be good.
I'd agree with you wholeheartedly. Like, I do. Speaking of goaltenders, is Ben Bishop going to play this year? Because otherwise they've got Hudobin and Holtby, and you still got Ottinger. Now, Ottinger doesn't require waivers. So as much as he would hate it, he might have to start the season in the minors at this point. But are you hearing that Bishop's not going to be ready at all, Frank? Because otherwise the Holtby signing is a head scratcher for me.
It is. You know, I had placed some calls actually before free agency, and the Stars were waiting on word from Ben Bishop about his status. And I think the answer was that they wouldn't get one until September. So they needed to get him back on the ice. He was skating toward the end of last season, but you're right. I thought it was a crowded crease before they signed Braden Holtby. I was saying to myself, what am I missing here? Like, is one of these guys potentially going to be on the move? And I thought it would probably be Hudobin at 3-3. It's a pretty reasonable cap hit for a team that might be looking for a starter. So you'd go, you know, maybe if Bishop is healthy, you go Bishop and Ottinger, and you see if Ottinger can carry the load. But, you know, the message to Ottinger, at least according to Jim Nill this week, was come ready to camp to be our number one goalie, and we'll see where it goes from there. So lots of goalies in that crease, and Braden Holtby, like, I was just surprised to see him go there. But got to tell you, I saw a picture, I think it was Matthew DeFranks from The Athletic, or from the Dallas Morning News, had tweeted out a projected lineup. the thing looks pretty good with the additions that they've made. Like, they're pretty solid all the way through their lineup if they can stay healthy. I mean, their defense, Heiskanen, Lindell, Klingberg, Suter, that's a pretty solid top four. And then they rounded out their third pair with Sekera and Yanni Hakanpää. Hakanpää, I mentioned there was a legit bidding war for that guy. 3 years times 1.5 million. He's a big D man who's steady and doesn't make a lot of mistakes. I think he was a fit in Edmonton. I think he was a fit in Toronto, maybe a team going back to Carolina. So there was lots of teams interested in his services. And I got to tell you, I think on paper, Dallas looks pretty set.
Well, you look at the Central Division, Frank, and you know, you have Colorado, of course, Dallas. I look at the Blues. I like Winnipeg. I think Winnipeg's defense has improved. You know, Paul Stastny, I like the forwards that they have. They still have Connor Hellebuck, who gives them a chance. He's a legit goaltender. Chicago's improved. You know, so you look at Chicago and how many new faces, and you can argue that Taves and Doc are new faces, considering that Taves didn't play last year and Doc only played 18 games. That division is going to be competitive. The Metro we touched on earlier, the Atlantic, obviously with Boston and Florida and Tampa and Toronto, the Montreal Canadiens could easily be on the outside looking in with all the potential injuries that team has to start the season. You know, the Pacific, there's Vegas and Edmonton, and then I think it's wide open after that. But the Central to me is going to be the fascinating one to watch, because after Colorado, there's no clear favorite. Dallas, Minnesota, St. Louis, Winnipeg, you know, and then, you know, can Chicago and Nashville, you know, compete? And I'm intrigued by that. I like going back to the divisions. We know that Arizona's out. We know that Buffalo's out. I don't think Anaheim's going to be competitive at all, really, in the Pacific Division.
Did Anaheim even try to get better over free agency or the last couple of weeks? Like, what were they doing?
They haven't done, they've really done
nothing. Felt like they were asleep at the wheel.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Frank, you look at the draft picks for the next two seasons, a lot of people are like, geez, you know what? You gotta look at the first rounders and who's coming out. And I think that's going to be kind of the race for some teams. It's
I at least get where Arizona's heading. At all their picks. I think they have seven picks in the first two rounds, including three first rounders. Like I get it. At least you can understand, like, oh, this team isn't going to be any good this year and probably the year after. But 2 years from now, they have a chance to be really competitive. I don't necessarily see or say the same thing about Anaheim, for instance.
Well, Anaheim, the big question mark for me when I look at their roster is John Gibson, because of his contract and his play, could be, you know, a very big piece that you could move and recoup a lot of pieces. And I wonder if that's ultimately what they do. The problem and the risk with that is if you have a starting goaltender who's legit and you're trying to retool quickly, it's a lot easier to do it. And because your goalie, you can just rely on him to win you some games, right? Or keep you in games. And then if your other players, you know, you get some lightning in a bottle here or there, all of a sudden you can be competitive. You remove Gibson from the equation. Now you're in a full-on rebuild. And that, I think they're just kind of waiting. Like, I wonder if you're John Gibson, you know, he's got a great contract for a goaltender and you've got another, 5 or 6 years left, just over $6 million. Like, you wonder how long he'll be patient in Anaheim as they just continue to kind of spin their wheels. And I don't believe you can rebuild with all youth. I saw it in Edmonton firsthand. It's a disaster. I don't care how highly touted young players are. You can't win with all young players. Everyone always talks about all the youth in the NHL. And then you get to the playoffs, Frank, and then we look at the playoff teams who win. How many of them are winning with key young players in massive positions? Hardly any. So, you know, Chicago, that's a decade ago that happened. Crosby is in his fourth year, Malkin still in his entry level deal. Though that doesn't happen anymore. Look at Pittsburgh when they won now. Look at Washington's veteran team. The Blues, you know, were a highly veteran team. And I know Binnington came out of nowhere, but he still was like a sixth year pro. So it doesn't happen anymore. And teams who think you can put all young players on the ice and forwards and defense and that you're going to be successful, they're dreaming. This has been proven time and time again, yet they still try to do it. It makes no sense to me.
I get exactly what you're saying, but the problem with the Ducks is that they're kind of in the worst spot. They're like, it's like the one thing you can't be is half pregnant. And that's what the Ducks are. It's like they're not even young. Like, look at their roster as it stands right now. Their key offseason acquisition has been bringing back 36-year-old Ryan Getzlaf. And look, I'm not knocking the signing. He's Mr. Duck, and I think they were really happy with the job that he did with their young guys. And I don't even know why it lingered that long, unless they just told him, go out and get whatever you need on the market and we'll match it. But Adam Henrique, 31, Jacob Silverberg, 30, Getzlaf, 36. I mean, Ricard Raquel isn't a young guy anymore at 28. Then you go on to their defense. Cam Fowler's 29. Hampus Lindholm, 27. Josh Manson, 29. Kevin Shattenkirk, 32. Like, then you've got Gibson and the conundrum that you mentioned there. Okay, so you trade John Gibson and you get a ton back from – what are you going to do in net? Franchise goalie even on the other side of the rebuild. So I don't know that it even makes sense, especially at a really manageable cap hit. He's 28. John Gibson can play until he's 40 if he wanted to. I struggle a little bit with the Ducks, but I actually do. I wanted to go back, not to flip flop back and forth, but go back to the Central and Chicago. Like, I'll believe in what they're doing there once we know the answer to what Marc-Andre Fleury's doing. Like, their goaltending is such a big part of it. I think to go into another season with Kevin Lankinen as your number one guy is going to put that team in a tough spot. I actually, like, there's the Seth Jones contract is confounding to me. First off, 9.5 is a ton. And second, it's now a 9-year commitment with the 5.4 that you are paying him for the first year of the deal. So that's a really long time. I know that he's 26, but I was saying to you previously, and this wasn't to knock him. I said this way before, you know, when his name first started to percolate, that there were teams out there that thought that Seth Jones was already on the decline pretty significantly. And it wasn't just because of a couple tough seasons. They looked at some metrics and they just said, something doesn't seem right here. I wonder if this guy can hold up for the long haul. And now you've got a 9-year commitment at a really significant number at 9.5. So they've done some interesting things up front. Bringing in Tyler Johnson, I think, was a win. It was also a win for the Tampa Bay Lightning to get that Seabrook contract back and give them even more cap space in the form of LTIR. They still have some work to do up front. They lost another couple pieces in Kampf and Pugh Suter. They've still have some holes to fill. And I think another team that is heading into next season, at least as currently constituted, even after signing Brandon Saad yesterday, is the St. Louis Blues. Who's going to score? If you're trading Tarasenko, which everyone thinks they will before the season starts, so you lose Tarasenko, you lose Schwartz, and you probably lose Tyler Bozak. Like, who's scoring your goals?
Well, let's go to Chicago, Frank. And yeah, we saw Nick Boynton's comments just yesterday come out. Like, I wonder how much that's going to weigh on the organization all season long. They're trying not to address it. I think it's impossible to ignore it. And you know, how much, you know, especially when Boynton comes out and starts naming a few veteran players to say, hey, stop with the lies. This is Boynton's words, not mine, that players knew, right? And he named some key players, and, you know, Patrick Kane, Brian Campbell, Patrick Sharp, obviously the latter two aren't there. But when I just, you know, that to me is something until that organization addresses. Now, this is just me, but I've said this for years and I've been a massive advocate of it, that when you have distractions and when you don't do things necessarily the right way, it just comes back around in whatever walk of life you are. And so the Chicago Blackhawks continually to try to avoid this topic. Trust me, it's a very difficult topic to address, but you can't deny it. And the longer you try to, the worse it always gets. Ask anybody in marriage, right? When you do something stupid, if you own up to it right away, you got a much better chance. Otherwise, it's just lingering. And even if you go, it's always there in the background and it rises up at some point, usually when you think everything is back smooth, and then something reminds your spouse of what you did previous to that and you still haven't addressed it, it's constantly there. and everybody knows it. And I think the Chicago Blackhawks, until this is addressed properly, it's going to linger. And I think it's going to be, and distraction is the wrong word, because that's trying to, I'm not down, down in the importance of what happened, but I believe that until they fully address it properly, it's going to be an issue.
Yeah. It's hanging over that team like a black cloud. Any move they make, you know, it's like, you can't really envision even Stan Bowman talking about it without addressing the issue again. And I got to tell you, there was so much made and talked about with Logan Mailloux and the shocking decision by the Montreal Canadiens to draft him in the first round that we didn't even really get a chance to touch last pod or last week about what the Blackhawks did with the following pick. Like, I actually felt terrible for the 12 or 14 women that were standing behind Stan Bowman, clearly being used as human PR shields as the Blackhawks made their pick. Like, this is an NHL organization that is, you know, not just under investigation. It's a quote, internal independent investigation, but it's also like the scorn of the hockey world right now with how they've handled this situation and these allegations. And they want to stand up here and grandstand and say, look how important women are to us. Like, I can't understand it. I can't understand the thought process behind it. Get up there, make your pick, and move on. Say your pick. Don't say anything else. We don't need, this isn't the time for messaging or grandstanding or to use those women as PR shields. I get it. There are a lot of women. Megan Hunter is the one who made the pick. She plays a critical, critical role in that organization. No one's saying that that's not the case, but the optics of that, man, it was shameful. It was disappointing.
Wow. And that's one where you have, I don't know if it's a PR firm or somebody thinks, oh, this will look good. And they don't believe that your audience is completely ignorant to situations like this. It's pretty clear what you want to do. Had you just had Megan make the pick on her own, there's validity to that. Because as you said, Frank, she's got an important role in the organization. That's easily all you could have done. It's when you have the 12, then it's, you know, you're trying to look power and united and, you know, look how we are. And
it's no different than their decision. Like, you know, as they're embroiled in this scandal that, you know, 48 hours later, we hear from Jonathan Toews for the first time in 18 months, it felt like, you know, saying, oh, I'm ready to come back and play. Like, huh? Like, oh, wait, Jonathan Toews, we haven't heard from you in forever. Now, all of a sudden, you're ready to talk and you're willing to give exclusives to you know, online entities. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah. Like, and here's the thing. I don't discount that the current regime might be significantly better in how, and you know, how they look upon the importance of women in their organization. I don't discount that. No. But because you haven't addressed the past, and that goes back to what I said about in the marriage and, you know, or any relationship you're in, when you don't address something, nobody's going to take you seriously.
Everything else you do, we see right through it.
Yeah. Even if you've improved, and they probably have improved, right? Like, Megan's got a real important role in that organization. So you know what? And there's probably some, and the other part is, Frank, you have people in the current roles who had nothing to do with what happened in 2010, absolutely nothing to do. And because you've still yet to address it, the people today have to pay the price for that. That's what makes it even more unsettling, is that now there's people in the organization who had nothing to do with it, have done absolutely nothing wrong, were never a part of it, but they're still going to be lumped in. And I won't lump those individuals in because they weren't there. But the people that were in the organization have still I understand legal ramifications, but you're a billion-dollar entity. You can't be worried about that. Do the right thing, address it properly, and move on. But until you address it properly, it's not going away. Mm-hmm.
Totally agree. And I just there's no more or less shameful after the Logan Mailloux pick. I would say that was equally as shameful what they did.
Okay. Quickly going back to the Ducks. And the reason I mentioned Gibson is because, Frank, you talked about their players that are older, and a lot of their older guys just aren't that good anymore. right? They're getting paid for past accomplishments. And that's usually a sign of a team that had won. You know, the Ducks were pretty competitive for a long time. They haven't been competitive now. And they're trying to bring up young guys with older guys who aren't very good. I think that it seems like they're in an inner battle internally to decide, okay, what are we as an organization? Right. I get that Ryan Getzlaff, you return him. He's the face of the franchise. He also has lots of business situations going on in Anaheim. His family life is important to him. I think the comfort level of staying there, that makes all the sense in the world. But why did you make no other moves in the offseason?
Why were you not taking advantage of some of the young players that were on the move? Like, why were you not the team that was signing a David Kampf for $1.5 million or some of these other guys that went really on the cheap in the last, you know, bit or expansion draft casualties that you could have picked up and really keyed in on? Like, why were they not leveraging some of the cap space that they have, $17 million and change, with some young guys still to sign in Max Jones and Sam Steele and Max Comtois? Like, why, you know, I don't know how to say it in any other way than I feel like they're asleep at the wheel.
Yeah, it's an interesting one to me for sure when I look at the whole situation for the Ducks, because I kind of don't understand what direction they're going in. Hey, maybe they'll shock me and they're going to be a way better team this year, but I don't get how and why that's going to happen. Because on paper, they've got some decent players that you look at and say, hey, this team should be competitive. Now, I know that John Gibson, there'll be probably people listening to the pod saying, Gregor, John Gibson hasn't been good the last few years. Yeah, I agree. His numbers on save percentage have not been good. When you dig a little bit deeper, because a lot of times the public available save percentage, that's just one stat. You got to look a lot deeper on goaltenders. And Gibson's numbers, you know, they give up a ton of quality chances, high danger chances. And, you know, that's obviously going to be a challenge. He has to play better. Don't get me wrong. But I believe there's something about when you're on a team that loses all the time, it's virtually impossible to have very good numbers. There's the odd player that does it. Right. You know, McDavid still put up 100 points. The Oilers didn't make the playoffs in 18 and 19. So, you know, you can do it, but it's pretty hard to do. And I look at Anaheim, and losing becomes more of a mental grind than a physical grind. Mm-hmm. It's rare that a losing team or everybody's singing Kumbaya and getting and happy together. So you have usually a little bit more toxicity in your room. Not negative. It's just a word that's kind of, you know, it's probably a bad choice of a word for me, but you have less excitement in your locker room. There's more unhappy players because some guys aren't getting the ice time they want. The team's losing. It's brutal. And Anaheim's kind of in that right now. And I don't see how they get out of it. And I thought Anaheim was going to be a player this offseason because they have some movable pieces for sure. And there was lots of teams that were like, we saw lots of big trades, Frank. And the Anaheim Ducks didn't sign anyone.
Yeah.
They didn't do anything. Like, it's the most perplexing. And then I call them their neighbor, the LA Kings.
They got way better. I was just going to say, we need to talk about the Kings and how much better that team is.
I think the Kings in the Pacific are Vancouver's a way better team too. So let's start with LA, then we'll go to Vancouver. But the LA Kings, like, my goodness, you've got Deneau and Kopitar as your top two centers. Like, I'm not sure how exciting the Kings are going to be, but my goodness, any opposing top six forward lines are going to have a real hard time generating a lot of offense against those two lines.
Well, I love it because what the Deneau signing does is take so much heat off of Kopitar. Like, you know, I think at a certain point, his offensive production has to wane because he's so focused on playing defensively in the matchups that he's been facing. This just takes a lot off of his shoulders. You know, and he's a guy that still had a really good year, 50 points in 56 games, but I think he can get back to that, you know, sort of next level in terms of production. And a really underrated acquisition that we haven't really talked much about was the trade for Victor Arvidsson. I feel like they barely gave up anything to get him. And that guy, not only does he dig in and play, like, he can score. He was the master at that. I remember covering a couple of those Preds playoff runs, the screen in front of the net where you jump and take the goalie's eyes out at the same time and the puck goes right through. Like, this is a guy that had a 34 goal season. He hit 31, 29, 34. And I know that production has sort of dipped a little bit, But everyone's curious as to whether the guys that leave Nashville can all of a sudden shoot up again in terms of their production. So that, and then the sneaky good signing on their back end was Alex Edler. Like, I know he's 35, but 1 year at 3.5 is no risk. And I think it just allows you, when you have some young guys on your back end, to properly sort of slot those guys out accordingly and be in a position that they are better suited to have success. And then they've still got their tandem in Quick and Peterson. They didn't lose either one in the expansion. The guy that it just hurts losing was Curtis McDermott.
See, I'm not as high on Edler as you are. Like, Edler was just a penalty-taking machine last year in Vancouver. It looked like, you know, the speed of the game. Now, maybe that was COVID, in the fact that, you know what, it's just a tough situation. And that's why I always use that, not as an excuse, but I think it's a fair point of evaluation when you look at a lot of players and if they had down years. But, you know, Edler's a veteran, probably, you know, the system they play in LA, they'll be a better defensive overall team than Vancouver. There's no question about it. But like Edler, I can't play Edler with Drew Doughty, right? Maybe I'm playing Olli Mäto with Drew Doughty. You know, we'll see. That's the one area I have concern about the Kings is I think they can compete for the playoffs. I'm not sure how far they can go unless some of their young defensemen take a step this year, because after Drew Doughty, Edler, Olli Mäto, you know, Matt Roy, Sean Walker, those are good players. But that to me is the one area where there's a little bit of, you know, they still need improvement.
Dude,
there.
You're sleeping on Sean Walker. I'm telling you.
No, I like Walker. I like Walker, but I'm not sure. Like, is Walker a legit guaranteed top four defenseman?
Yeah. Yes, he is.
You think he is?
I'm sorry. Yeah. Well,
Edler is, man. Edler to me right now, like maybe he'll be reborn and his experience will help him. And LA Kings system is infinitely better defensively. So that's probably going to help him. But man, I watched the Canucks a lot last year, Alex Edler at times, Frank, like he was skating in quicksand, it looked like. So
his penalties, just so you know, his PIMs were no different or no worse than the last 3 years.
Yeah, but it's just, he takes a lot of minors. Like, it's not like that guy's taking coincidental roughing penalties, right? Mm-hmm. So I watched
Matt Roy, by the way, like, he's another good player. Like, I don't know. I really like the Kings and their top four. I get what you're saying, but I don't mind Edler because it's a 1 year deal. You didn't get roped into the multi year, you know, deal for some of these old. And then, like, when you look at Edler, and I know Goligoski had a good year, but you look at Edler at 3.5 and you look at Goligoski at 5. Like, to me, I just think he's sort of perfectly slotted.
We got lots of guests coming up in the pod, so the next few weeks. So we're going to hit on a few more teams here quickly. What's the latest on Minnesota? Because, you know, they went out and they saved all this money, and then they just signed $5 million on Goligoski. What are you hearing on Fiala negotiations? Is he still looking for 7? And any movement on Kaprizov, is it ultimately going to be a 40 deal?
I haven't heard much about Fiala. I think... you know, they're still working away on that. Kaprizov, I don't see any way in which it's not in that 4 to 5 year range. The team wants 8. The player wants something short term. You know, I'd assume you just meet in the middle at it's still going to be a pretty significant contract. But, you know, I think there was a lot of disappointment in Minnesota when they didn't get Nick Foligno. Obviously, they wanted to reunite him with his brother Marcus. I got to tell you, look, this isn't any sort of knock on Nick Foligno. By all accounts, unbelievable guy. I really wonder what he has left. And to go 2 years at 3.8, to even get close to what he was earning last year on that long-term deal at 5.25 or 5.4, whatever it was, to get close to that is a shock to me. I think there's some significant question marks about Nick Foligno's injury status. His back seems to have been having flare-ups. I mean, good on him for getting the 2 years at 3.8, but I think there were a lot of teams out there that looked at Nick Foligno in the $1.5 to $2 million range. And if he ended up in Boston, that's probably the best thing that could have happened to Minnesota, even though they were a little disappointed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a pretty big contract. And if he's healthy, he's definitely worth it. But if he has back injuries or back issues, that's obviously a concern. Let's get to Rapid Fire, delivered by DoorDash, proud sponsor of the Nation Network and the Daily Faceoff podcast. Restaurants, you can do that. Food and everything else delivered right to your door. Check out locally. I know Popeye's Louisiana Chicken's my fave to use at DoorDash. And right now, if you've never tried it, They'll deliver the food right to your door. You can use the promo code RUNDOWNDD. That's RUNDOWNDD. And you'll get 25% off and free delivery. So it's a great deal. That's five questions delivered by DoorDash. So we'll get to it, Frank. Thomas Tatar, where do you think he ends up in free agency?
Well, it's interesting. The Toronto Maple Leafs are a team that still has a little cap space left. I think they were one of the teams that was interested in Tatar on a shorter money deal. I don't know if he'll ultimately end up going there, but I think he'd be a decent fit in their bottom six.
Man, Tatar is a scoring machine at 5-on-5. I mean, pumping his tires.
Anyone signed him?
Well, there's lots of guys like that. It happens. Like, no one signed Mike Hoffman until he settled for a 1-year deal. Like, I, you know what it is, Frank? I'll tell you, because teams focus on what he doesn't do rather than on what he does do.
He's one of those guys, whenever I look at his age, I'm like, wait, he's only 30? Like, he's one of those guys you think is like 36.
He's 22nd, Frank, over the last three seasons at 5-on-5 scoring. 22nd! Like, you got teams dying for 5-on-5 scoring. So I look, yeah, he might be a fit in Colorado as well. You know what? They got a real good top nine. They got a few slots open. You could go Thomas Tatar on a decent deal, which leads
me to speaking of the, well, is that, were you going to ask about Nick Ritchie?
Yeah, just let me ask my questions. I'm asking the questions here. Where is Nick Ritchie going?
Yeah, I think he visited with the Toronto Maple Leafs on Thursday.
Okay. I like Nick Ritchie. I think that'd be a good signing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually a little bit surprised that the Bruins didn't qualify him, because I was just like, okay, like, he's 25, he fits right into what you're doing. Like, I know that he's going to be probably looking at something in the fours, maybe low fives, 15 goals. Maybe teams think he's just can't do it again or can't duplicate it, but I don't know. I would have kept him.
One of the top defensemen left on the board, Ryan Murray. What are you hearing?
I think he's a fit in Edmonton.
Well, I know that, I can tell you, Frank, that they made an offer to him. I've heard there's that he has offers from five different teams. I know Edmonton's one of them. But I will say that Edmonton doesn't have a ton of cap space. And I think that
they're also looking for a left winger and a goalie.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they're looking necessarily for a left winger, because they've got Hyman, they've got Nugent Hopkins, and they got Fogle. And they also, I even though I know that they like their prospects to ripen, they've got, you know, Devin Shore, you've got Tyler Benson, who's 3 years in the American League. He's going to get qualified. Well, he's being qualified, but, you know, he'll sign a low-term deal. They've got Dylan Holloway. Man, Craig Button he believes that Holloway is easily ready to play in the NHL right now. So I think they don't want to sign another left winger and then just not have space potentially for Holloway. So I think they definitely wanted left defenseman for sure to look at. And you're right, Murray would make a lot of sense for them.
The knock on him is that he's been a human band-aid.
Yes,
and I can tell you that the New Jersey Devils, in their experience with him, they were really pleasantly surprised with not just how well he played when he was on the ice, but also his dedication and commitment to training. I think he blew them away with that. Just wasn't a fit to stay, but they were actually really pleasantly surprised.
Will Zdeno Chara play another season?
Yes. I think he's just going to take a few weeks to decide. I wonder if he's a fit in Florida. I think he has a house in Florida. That team's going to be good, man. They're they really, really improved this offseason, and they had a good team last year. That Reinhardt trade is like really, really good. They got to sign him to a deal. My guess is that comes in somewhere around 5 years, $7 million when it's all said and done. That's just a ballpark, not any reporting on my end. But man, Florida's good.
I really like their team as well. They got a lot of depth all over the place. You know, you got young Knight to spell off Bobrovsky. They're obviously Barkov.
Spell him off for what, the next 6 years?
Well, at least for this year, Frank. He might end up sooner than later being the most expensive backup in NHL history.
Sorry, it's only five more years.
Yeah, but still, he could be the most expensive backup in NHL history very, very soon. And one other name that I'm kind of interested in, just to see, you know, where he goes. I don't think he's a big you know, he's going to surprise a lot, but he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Is Jumbo Joe Thornton? Is Jumbo Joe playing again?
I'm going to say no.
Ooh.
Now, is that his? Wants to, I just, like, man, he just didn't bring a lot to the table. Look, I know the guys love him, 42 years old, wants to keep playing, competitive guy, wants to win. I don't know. I think when you got to the playoffs last year, you know, towards the end of the season, he was a non-factor.
Yeah. I wonder if fatigue maybe set in a little bit. Could he maybe. Be a player? Could he be a player that you come in for his leadership and personality in the room, expecting to say, "Hey, Joe, we're gonna limit your games in the regular season just to keep you fresh." Right now, I don't know if players want to ever admit to that or not, but we'll see. But he's a surefire Hall of Famer for me. Not only as a player on the ice, but absolutely beloved by teammates. Like, he made guys, didn't matter who you were, he made you feel important on the team. And I think that's something that some star players don't have, and mm-hmm. Thornton has that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question, first ballot Hall of Famer.
Frank, we will have our guest lined up. We're going to have a real good personality guy, just signed a 3-year contract in Carolina. Jordan Martinuk is joining us on Monday. We will also have GM coming up, a few players who were switched in the offseason. So I know the last few pods have just been us, but we'll get back to our guests now that free agency for the most part is done.
Two things.
We'll focus on things.
Two things. I just wanted to add on to the Edmonton Oilers. I do think that they've continued to work the phones on the goaltending front. I think the team that they've been in touch with is the Columbus Blue Jackets about Junas Korpisalo. I think Merzlikins is going to end up with a longer-term extension there when it's all said and done. And I think Korpisalo is going to be the guy on the go. They're looking for a first-round pick as part of the package. I think the Oilers would be willing to do that if that meant they're also taking Koskinen. The other question is, what part, you know, what else are you having to give up in order to make that happen? And I think that there's some interest in Samarukov. So I think it's a potential, you know, that he's part of it, but that's just,
well, you look for, sorry to interrupt, but Timmins in a first went for Kemper. So you're basically, because, you know, maybe Samarukov, you know, he hasn't played in the NHL yet. Timmins has played a few games. But
there's got to be a price to get them to take Koskinen, right?
Yep.
So that's where Samarukov might come in.
Mm-hmm. So Samarukov and Koskinen for Korpisalo, who, you know what, that's
Samarukov a first and Koskinen for Korpisalo. Something like that. I'm not saying it's going to be done or anything close to that. I just think that's sort of a general framework of a conversation that's been ongoing.
Yeah. Well, I do know that the Oilers were in on the Kemper deal, but just when you look at the price tag that they paid in Colorado, Edmonton would have had to pay even more because Colorado, as you mentioned, you know, they got Kemper, but Arizona kept $1 million in cap space.
Well, I think Oilers are a big reason why the price ended up being what it was.
Yeah.
I think they ended up driving it up a bit for Colorado.
Yeah, that Koskinen contract, the day it was signed, I still remember. I was in Maui on holidays, and I got a call from my show saying, "Hey, sorry, but we need to have you on for it." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And Koskinen, I'm like, "Oh, what did he sign for?" And I'm like, 4.5. I thought they meant it was a 3-year deal that was a total of 4.5 million, averaging 1.5 mil. Not 4.5 per. It made absolutely no sense. What made it worse was Peter Chiarelli got fired the next day. So everybody in the organization, like, unless Peter Chiarelli had just went rogue suddenly and filed this all by himself and no one else knew in the organization, which I don't buy for a second because it's not how teams run, that contract, the minute it was signed. And here's the thing, Frank, like, there was no reason to do it.
No, none.
You could have waited. That was on January 29th. You could have waited because they ended up being injuries, and Koskinen, you know, got played way too much, ran into the ditch, was terrible numbers. You could have signed him at the end of that season for probably a 3-year deal at $2 million a year, and no one would have batted an eye at that point. It's those years from 16, 17, 18 for the Edmonton Oilers were just horrific decisions that they're still paying for. They're still paying for it.
It's amazing. I remember being on a plane shortly thereafter with Peter Chiarelli's firing, and I was just like, wow, this Koskinen contract was a killer then. It's a killer now.
Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to say, episode 50, we hit a milestone, almost perfect timing. right at the end of all the craziness that has been trade season, expansion draft, free agency. Just wanted to thank everyone for listening and following along, because you know, it's been really fun to do this with you, Jay, and it's been awesome to have everyone come along for the ride with us.
No, it's been great. We're getting, you know what, big thanks to all those people who reach out on social media and say they appreciate the pod. We see you. I try to reply to most of them. Obviously can't get to all of them, but thank you. And we look forward to joining us for episode 51. To the next 50, Frank, have a good weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special coming your way this playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and let me tell you, it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of those questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you gotta pick the winning team. That sounds simple, right? But there's more. You gotta decide if the total amount of goals in the game will be over or under a certain amount, and that's where the real strategy starts to kick in. Next up, you're picking who's gonna find the back of the net first, and you're gonna wanna be careful, because that's one that could be cooked early on in the game. And finally, you gotta predict which period is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That's up to you to decide. Now let's talk about prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? For the daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards to treat yourself to some fresh nation gear, and you might even win a jersey from your favorite team. And for the big dogs, those who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.